nothing tastes as good as a cup of Bahamian tea. Ah.
The views and opinion expressed in this podcast are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entity or organizations.
You are listening to the podcast Tea and Talk, presented to inform, educate, inspire, and encourage meaningful conversations on Bahamian arts and culture. My name is Robert Bain, dancer, teacher, choreographer, and someone who believes in the preservation of all things Bahamian. I am sitting down with persons of like mind to discuss the Bahamian perspective on the arts and the Bahamian way. Now, let's welcome our guest.
Welcome back to Tea and Talk. This is Robert Bain with another podcast, yes. This podcast is coming to you from Nassau, Bahamas, one of the islands in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, where the capital. There are 700 islands. We boast of 700 islands. I think 30 of them are inhabited by people, by beautiful people. And our islands, it's just as beautiful as the persons that live on it. We all know why this podcast was established. Let me remind you, it was established to give a voice to the artists out there. To talk about things that impedes our development or some of the things that are going right. We want to talk about anything that's Bahamian. We are a beautiful country with beautiful people, like I said, you know, and there's lots of stories and things that we'd like to talk about. Before I get started, I'd like to thank Jason Ferguson for the music. Opening introduction. Thank you, Jason. Today is a very special day, as all podcasts are special. Today we have a young lady that I've known for quite a number of years. I think I remember her when she was a little girl, starting sometime at the National Dance School. And then she moved to Eurythmics and she's doing some wonderful things out there on the world stage. And for some reason, Bahamians, we don't get a chance to see these wonderful Bahamians out there that's doing amazing work. We get to see the athletes and everybody else. But there are Bahamians out there that are doing some amazing, amazing, amazing work. And one of those Bahamians, I'm going to introduce you to now. Her name is Shanice Kemp. We've been trying to hook this podcast up for a little while, and I'm happy that I have her here this morning. It's a beautiful day in the Bahamas. The sun is out. Summer is not here yet, but boy, it's getting hot. And Shanice, welcome to Tea and Talk.
Hi, Mr. Bain. Thank you for having me. We've been having this back and forth trying to get this organized for a little bit. So thank you for your patience and for just, you know, opening up the space for me to be a part of this wonderful podcast. I appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to our talk today.
Shanice, tell us about yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Let's go back from where you started and to where you are at present. Where this is, just let me let the audience know that this podcast is being, she is in the U.S. So, you know, thanks to technology, this is how it works these days, you know, and she's like next door. But go ahead, tell us about Shanice.
Yeah, so I started at the National Dance School, like you said, with Shirley Hall Bass. I was very young, so I believe I was only there maybe a year.
Very short time.
I moved with then Gabriella. Well, Gabriella Szabo, but then Gabriella and Lawrence Carroll at Eurythmics Studio. And that's why I did most of my training. From about 7 years old all the way until you know, really my first year of college. So 7 to 17 to 18, I was with Eurythmics Studio. You know, similar to many other Bahamians, there's a specific track that we often take on as we move forward in our collegiate career. So I was on the medicine, the pre-med track, biochem major originally, and that quickly shifted. So I actually was supposed to go to Hampton on a track scholarship again, you know, track field. I did both in high school, dance and track. And so I was supposed to go to Hampton on a track scholarship. Went there, you know, everything kind of was in place in the way that, you know, my dad thought that it needed to be. So I ended up doing a semester at the then, you know, COB College of the Bahamas, and I went to UNCC in Charlotte. So I went to UNCC in Charlotte, and I remember walking in to, I don't remember what the building was, but it was one of the buildings on campus. And I remember seeing dancers, like they were doing ballet. So, you know, I inquired, I was like, well, how do I take this class? You know, who's the teacher? So on and so forth. And I remember one of the dancers coming out, and she pretty much said, she was like, oh, this is for majors only. And, you know, she was really, she was quite snobby about it, to be honest. She was really snobby. And I ignored it. I ignored it because, you know, Caribbean folk, we could get that together really quick.
But very quickly.
I ignored it, you know, but I didn't realize that, you know, I could pursue dance as a career in college. So anyway, I still stayed with biochem for that year. And I started to do dance, and I approached my parents about switching my majors to dance. And the long and short of it was, you know, my hip hop teacher at UNCC was like, you need to go, if you're going to do this, you need to go into a city, particularly a city that has Black and Brown dancers, that are, you know, have companies that are doing good work and so on and so forth. So that's how I ended up at Temple University in Philadelphia. Did my BFA and MFA in dance there, career there, and, you know, started with many companies there, branched out, you know, I've danced internationally, nationally, and I'm still a freelance, you know, performing artist, but I'm also a professor of dance at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County now, on tenure track, which is an awesome thing. I go for tenure in September. So, I mean, just I've done a lot of wonderful things with dance, and things that I feel may not have been something that I thought about while in the Bahamas, while I was, you know, young, you know, as in terms of a career, a long lasting career in dance. So that's what I'm currently doing, teaching and choreographing and writing and still performing.
You did something just recently with Misty Copeland.
I did. Yeah. So, well, actually, it's the dean of the performing arts department of UMBC. Our dean had this idea to have this series called Artful Conversations, where she brings in, you know, a prominent artist from various disciplines. And we started with dance. And so Misty Copeland came in, and, you know, they asked that my work, along with another colleague, and we chose a senior, a rising senior, that our work be presented in the concert aspect of the conversation. So that was, you know, that was quite interesting in a good way. It was a beautiful exchange. The students were very excited to have Misty there and to be able to dance and perform. Well, like they say, before her, but I, you know, I reminded them that you are sharing your gift with her.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we get it twisted a little bit, and I get it, you know, they're at that age where they're starstruck and all of that. but just to make sure that they know that dance is most definitely an exchange, that, you know, you are sharing. You're sharing your gift, your talent, your time, your sweat, your love of dance with this individual that has also been gracious enough to share hers with us.
Absolutely. What are we missing here in the Bahamas, Janice? What are we missing?
In regards to?
With regards to the arts itself, the dance, what are we missing? The value that dance possessed, all the things that it could do for us as a country, as a developing country, in terms of economics, what could it do for us? In terms of art integration, integrating it into education, what could it do for us? What are we missing?
Mm-hmm. I think the root of it is just an overall understanding of the art of dance in general, mm-hmm. just the education piece of it. And when I say that, I mean that, you know, even from my time growing up, dance in particular was always seen and viewed, and I think in many ways it's still seen and viewed as just an extracurricular activity, just a hobby, just something that, you know, we send our little girls to, and, you know, it's something that they love, and, you know, it bides the time. I think that narrative has been at the root of many conversations and on the overall understanding of dance, where it doesn't afford the space or the opportunity for artists and current choreographers, current dance educators in the Bahamas to be able to push at the level that's required for advancement in the dance and in the arts. And when I say that, I mean where students can then matriculate into collegiate programs or pre-professional companies or professional companies and feel as though they are on this, they're the same level, you know, mm-hmm. they're on par as mm-hmm. it relates to their training, as it relates to their level of expertise that they've acquired. And so I think that overall just knowledge about the art form of dance and the various ways that one can engage with it beyond just a hobby is a missing piece. It's an integral piece,
right.
That I feel is just, we just need more awareness. And because of that, there's a lack of appreciation beyond a space holder for like entertainment. You know, we're going to have these dancers do this at, you know, the airport or at this, you know, our 40th anniversary for this, or, you know, beyond the scope of just entertainment, there's not really an appreciation for the work itself. Because it's work.
Yeah.
We are athletes, you know, and it's not just fluff.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's a big missing piece, because it's there's also a differentiation between that and then also music.
Right.
You know, music still stands above dance, I feel like, in the Bahamas, in mm-hmm. terms of the appreciation for it. I feel like, you know, Bahamians or parents can see their child pursuing music or getting a scholarship for music, or, you know, having a career that's affiliated with music, more than they can do, more than they can perceive for dance.
I think that, well, and rightly so. I think persons have a right to have that that impression. And I think I normally, I tend to blame myself. I tend to blame persons who've been responsible for this art form over the years, have not done their due diligence, I feel. Because just as there are scholarships and opportunities for musicians, there's also the same thing for the dance. One of the problems that I find here in the Bahamas is the lack of appreciation for the process. And when I say process, I'm talking about the actual training, the 8 hours a day, the understanding that if you are going to be a dancer, it goes beyond the stage. I always say to my students, I said, you know something, if you really, really, really want to see a dancer on stage, that's not where you see them. Go into the classroom. You see what they're doing in the classroom, because anybody can learn a piece of choreography and perform it. Right? But I think the problem is we lack the process, the training process to get the dancers where they're at. And because of that, I've seen so many dancers that have gone on to dance and then they stop. Because when they get into that environment, that true environment, it is nothing that they recognized, and they quit. And so we, one of the things that we have to do here in the Bahamas, I feel, is to, I think there are many roads that we take, and right now we need to take the right road, and the right road is to impress upon persons, if you want to dance, this is what you need to do. You can't skip it. You can't skip it. Mm-hmm. You can't come through, have an education and don't do math or don't do English and don't learn your alphabets and don't learn your numbers and that sort of thing. And they have to be aware of that. We can sensitize the public and hopefully we'll get a different response. I don't know what we're gonna do.
But Mr. Bain, you know, I still feel like it, and it may not be the only thing, but I'm still drawing to, or I'm led to believe that it is, the root is still just kind of the lack of knowledge and the lack of appreciation.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, if, let's just say, okay, we know where track and field stands, right? Mm-hmm. And we know what it takes to develop athletes that are competitive at, like, you know, the junior level, whether it's CARIFTA and then, you know, moving into the Olympics and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have more students that see athletics as a way, not out, but a way towards gaining, you know, funding and scholarships for higher education, so on and so forth. And so these parents, they don't play with them. No, you're gonna go to practice. Mm-hmm. You're gonna run this thing, or you're gonna make sure that you eat right, or you listen to whatever the coach is saying. And you know, if practice is 7 days a week, they had practice 7 days a week. You in the gym, you doing this, you doing that. And I think that if we as a nation, as a society, as, you know, parents and if we understand the value of dance and we hold it at the same place that we do other art forms and or other things, I feel like the shift would happen. Mm-hmm. And I'm not certain if I would necessarily put the blame on you all, because I also feel like you can only do but so much. How can you maintain a level of rigor in your school if it's not supported?
Correct.
Particularly, yes, correct, by the parents. I mean, the students can come in and you know, if they want to be lazy, they want to be lazy. But trust me, if the parents, if the guardians understand the value or the level of appreciation is the same as if they are going in their regular classes at school, or they are, you know, on on the track team or the volleyball team or whatever it is, they're going to get that pushback.
Right.
Like, no, you're going to be at this rehearsal. No, you're going to eat right. No, you're going to, you know, do what Mr. Vane says. You're going to, you know, the level of rigor won't be the issue because they understand. And especially if they're paying for it, you know, they understand that this is going to get, this potentially can get you to another place.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I just don't think that they see that or they value it beyond, I want to, at the end of the year, I want to come and see you dress up and play dance mom or play dance dad. And you know, we have a good time and this is an outlet and girl, you could dance. Mm. But beyond that, there's that space now where if this individual, this child says, I know I really want to dance. No, I want to dance for real, for real. Mm. Like I want to do this professionally. Or I want to study this in college. There's that space where, you know, and I won't speak for everyone because, you know, I'm sure that there's been a shift and a change because more Bahamians are studying and moving into, you know, working in this field professionally. Mm-hmm. But I can imagine that it's not met with just a, okay, sure. No problem. Yeah. Now, you know, or with, you know, without any resistance, particularly when we're talking about a country that is, you know, historically we're rooted in the doctor, in the banking,
in the lawyer,
in, you know, there's these 5 to 7 areas that many children are from young ages are kind of either groomed for or encouraged to walk that path, or maybe it's in their familial, you know, line that, you know, I come from a family of lawyers and a family of doctors and a family of this thing and a family of educators, you know. So I think that's the space. That is most definitely the space that, or the gap.
What do you think, Jeunesse? Right now, the University of Bahamas is proposing a BFA program. And next week, Tuesday, on the 26th, I think, it's a meeting that they're having, a town hall meeting, at 6 o'clock, actually. And they're bringing in Akitha Carey, who is a Bahamian dancer that lives in Florida. Their whole thing is to establish a program, a BFA program, to make it a part of the university. And I think this is a really a giant step for dance in terms of really being a forward thrust for the dance. And I'm quite sure there's so much that could come out of it as a result of. What is your take on that? And what is your opinion? And how do you feel about that whole process?
So, you know, I know Akitha, and actually I first heard about this process from Akitha. She reached out for, you know, in her being tasked with this giant, with this giant and this having this task, you know, she reached out to me and other Bahamians just to gather information, not just about potential curriculum, but about, you know, teaching the education aspect of this program, like, you know, whether and what that may look like. So I plan to attend a town hall meeting because I think I missed one of the sessions that they had before, just to gain a little bit more information about it. Because I also think that there was, I don't remember, it was maybe a couple of years ago, someone reached out to me, I don't remember his name, but nothing really came from it, you know? But questions were asked that I feel were hard questions and difficult questions. And I think that that would also be the process around this because, you know, we don't have a performing arts high school. We have not had any major programming that that results in a BFA degree. Mm-hmm. Now there's, you know, and there's just so much that goes along with it. I think that it's an amazing, idea, opportunity. I think that it will be beneficial to the new generation of artists that are coming up.
Yes.
I also think though that there's going to be a need for a level of expertise that I'm not certain resides solely in the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm. Agree. Completely agree.
I don't, and this is not to, because you know how we go. This ain't to knock no one. You know, oftentimes it's, you know, ah, this person done gone over and they think they better and da 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 da. And you know how we are, but it's not that. It's the fact of the matter. You can't bring a knife to a gunfight. You have to, if you have to outsource where you may not have the space yet within the environment in which you're trying to build something. And the outsourcing doesn't always mean foreign. Right. That's the next part of it. I think, too, that, you know, culturally, we don't always utilize the expertise of our Bahamian people, especially the ones that have may have gone off and you know, gotten a lot more experience in whatever particular field it is. But I think that there's, you know, there's that space of like American things, mm-hmm. foreign things. I think that it's going to be a wonderful thing, but it's going to take a lot of work. And I think it's going to take also a lot of open-mindedness to critical feedback.
Okay.
And I don't know all of the parties that are involved, but I wonder if we, and I say we because it's all of us, are prepared for that level of critical analysis and critique and coming in and really saying, how are we going to build this thing where it is going to be sustainable, mm-hmm. where it's going to be competitive? Because, you know, even programs, BA, BFA programs here in the United States, there are ones that are, you know, floating by, and there are ones that are, you know, reputable and are standing at the top of the game. And, you know, we want to make sure that when we do this, it is done right. And there it's done where Bahamians in particular that go through this program and gain a BFA, that BFA is on par
with the other,
to
yes.
some of the most prestigious top programs in the world,
in the
United States, in the world. Mm-hmm. That's the level of programming that I hope we can not only, you know, dream up, but create and birth and sustain. Because I think it's going to be important. And beyond that, my hope is that the reputation of the BFA program at the University of the Bahamas is one that everyone around the world
would
want to be a part of.
Exactly.
That's the ultimate goal. Mm-hmm. But that's going to take some serious work
and time.
Some serious work.
Yes.
And a level of expertise that is going to make sure that the faculty, that the directors and everybody else that is involved with disseminating the information and teaching the scholarship and the technique and the choreographic processes and everything else is up to par.
Absolutely. I personally think that hopefully, if done properly, you know, it will hopefully help in the visibility of dance, and hopefully, you know, there can be other aspects of it, the educational process, all the things that we wish to happen. I'm praying that that will also mm-hmm. happen.
The main individuals who are spearheading this project, are they themselves are they key players with the programs that are currently a part of the University of the Bahamas' catalog in terms of their offerings at bachelor's level, in terms of building that?
They're the persons responsible okay. for the establishment of the program. They are persons who are part of the university. What they have done over the past couple of years is to reach out to Bahamians, reached out to persons like myself, Mr. Carroll, Akitha. And I think initially when they started this program during the COVID, I'd mentioned a lot of names and your name came up, and I said, y'all need to also involve her, you know, Courtney Spears, the rest of everybody need to be involved, who can actually make an impact. But they understand the work that's entailed, and they realize that they cannot do it by themselves. So they are, again, looking around and trying to get the best information, the best advice, in terms of the content of what will be that will create a curriculum for the program. But in terms of their how they position within the university, they are in the university. They are actually a part of it. They are artists. They are artists themselves. If not the dance, there is an awareness of what needs to happen in terms of dance, and people for years have been advocating for it, and they are aware of that as well. And so it just came to a point, I think, you know, where they said, you know, it's time, and when that thought came about, that is when everybody else was brought on board to contribute. So there is a committee that they have established, you know. I don't want to talk anything into it, basically, but they are what you are probably thinking about. They are providing, trying to make sure that the right persons, they are part of it. And if they have to outsource, even bringing people in to make it happen, they're prepared to do that as well. And I think they realize that there is a lot of things that need to be happened. I mean, recently, even my book now that I've done as part of the reading at the university, and they're quite serious about it because the minute the book was released, they wanted all the copies, you know. But I'm just saying, I mean, I'm hoping I'm answering your question.
Yeah. And I know this is kind of side chat. You are. I just solely because, you know, there's a fine line. I feel like, you know, I feel like we have to outsource everything. Everything is always outsourced, right? Mm-hmm. But I also feel as though, ultimately, I would hope and like to see that whatever, even if it's in its initial stages as it relates to outsourcing. And when I say outsourcing, it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, all foreigners. You know, individuals in education mm-hmm. that, you know, well, whatever. But ultimately, I would love to see that the program is really a hub for the advancement of Bahamian artists. And when I say that, I mean that the program should be should develop in such a way where it's almost a feeder in that, even if Bahamians, artists do not go through the BFA, or they go through the BFA and they go somewhere else for their MFA or whatever, that they are coming back to, or they're able to come back to then be professors and be, lecturers and be, adjunct, or however the system is, they're planning to tear the system, where it's, and yes, there's that exchange where we have, foreigners as well, because I also think too that we, in some of the spaces that I've been seeing, the individuals that are cultivating, the new generation of dancers, are in their own little incubators and in their own little hubs. And I'm not all knowing, but some of the spaces, I'm not certain if they are qualified to be, teaching dance,
Well,
and so.
quite frankly, and I can say this, this is my podcast, and I can say this. If I had the will, I would. A lot of dance schools in this country would be closed. They would be closed. I would shut them down. They're doing a disservice to what we hope to achieve. But that's just me. That's just me.
Because
But.
with this BFA program, and I'm speaking it into, I'm speaking it into existence, right? If with a BFA at the University of Bahamas, then minimally, I mean, the individuals that are the young children that are training at the institutions in the Bahamas, the studios, the local studios in the Bahamas, should be
Yes.
up to par, should be, I mean, accepted on the level of anyone else coming into a BFA program
There
at UB.
should be
If the matriculation process should be a
matriculation process. That's
no-brainer.
right. That's right.
It should be a no-brainer. The training
Exactly.
should be that good.
Join me for a continuation of my discussion with Shanice Camp. You're listening to Tea and Talk.
The views and opinion expressed in this podcast are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entity or organizations.